the latest agriculture news from across the state and the nation, here's Farm City Newsday by AgNet West. Here's your host, Danielle Leal.
Hey, good morning, and thanks for joining us today here on AgNet West Farm City Newsday. In a California Farm Bureau Food and Farm News report, California's biggest wildfire is leading to widespread evacuations of livestock and urgent efforts to care for animals left behind. The Dixie Fire is the second largest in California's recorded history and has destroyed thousands of acres of rangeland, including for migratory cattle. Farm bureaus in Butte, Sierra, and Plumas counties are partnering to help feed and maintain livestock. Similar efforts are underway in Nevada's County River Fire. Moving right along into today's program headlines, Brian German is talking with us about collaboration helping to guide the development of robotic harvesters in the strawberry industry. Also in today's show, questions of authority arise regarding the Water Board's emergency curtailment. And I'm starting off today's news with the process behind collecting data for county crop and livestock reports as they start to pop up around the state. Let's jump right in. Crop and livestock reports are now starting to be released. Tulare County Agricultural Commissioner Tom Tucker says there's interagency and multi-sector collaboration used to come up with the data.
So as far as the 2020 crop report goes, we've received the bulk of the data that goes into it, which are the numbers, the planted acreages, the values of those individual crops. That starts off early, as soon as the growers, in many cases, finish up their crop years.
Tucker says they also get information from packing houses and processors, and then later in the year,
we actually get information from NAS.
That information is helpful because
we receive information that sometimes, from a pricing standpoint, we can see what's happened throughout the state. Whether our county specifically might have received a little bit more value prices for their commodities, our growers did, versus some in other parts of the state.
Stay tuned to AgNet West and this radio station as I will air the first portion of my interview with Tucker later in our interview segment of the show today. But for right now, we've got two great back-to-back reports with AgNet West reporter Brian German.
Some questions have been raised regarding the Water Board's authority to impose the emergency curtailment restrictions on senior water rights holders. Executive Director of the California Farm Water Coalition, Mike Wade, explained their understanding of the Water Board's action and what that could mean for pre-1914 water rights moving forward.
Our understanding is this order reaches all the way back to pre-1914 water rights, and it is unprecedented. I'm not aware of a time when a state agency has exercised that authority on water rights holders that predate the existence of the authority granted to the agency, meaning those existed long before the Water Board was ever created. And we'll see through interpretation of prior court rulings and any new ones that may come whether or not that's true. But we understand from recent court decisions that the board is exercising their right to issue this curtailment. However, we live in California and there may be lawsuits that arise. I'm not aware of any at this point, but there may be some that challenge the board's authority for pre-1914 water rights. They did say that these go back to rights, I believe, to 1883 and later, but we'll find out in the coming weeks whether or not that's true.
Collaborative projects are helping to guide the development of robotic harvesters for the strawberry industry. UC Davis has partnered with Advanced Farm to establish a trial looking at various strawberry cultivars and their potential for robotic harvesting. The project will be looking at the specific characteristics of both released and unreleased cultivars. Strawberry licensing field representative for the UC Davis Strawberry Breeding Program, Isaac Rainwater, provided a timeline for how the trial will be conducted.
So the plants are in the nurseries up in Northern California right now, and the nurseries will harvest in late September, early October, and the plants will get planted down in Oxnard around that same time frame, and we'll start getting the first fruits off in December, and then the season will run December through mid-April or so. So, that'll be upcoming next spring. We'll have some good data coming out of it.
Data will be collected over the course of the season, which will ultimately help UC Davis breeders better understand the traits that exhibit the most potential for using robotic harvesting. The underlying goal of the project is to identify certain traits in different cultivars that make them more conducive to robotic harvesting, which will play a role in future plant selection.
A lot of it is timing and, you know, where you're at in the season, how the fruit's displayed, how the plants grow, and, you know, the timing of all that. Yeah, that's great information for the breeders. It's going to be super helpful for them. So when they, you know, make their selections in the breeding process, they can pick and choose certain traits that, you know, will be helpful for the robotic guys.
The strawberry breeding program at UC Davis is always looking to work with new partners in furthering the efforts for optimizing the potential of robotic harvesting.
Like I said, if there's other robotic harvesting groups out there that are interested in doing something similar, you know, they can contact us and we can see what we can do.
I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
Thanks, Brian. It is time for us to head out for our first break of the show. We'll be right back with more of the day's national headlines and local reports, including our livestock report from Miranda Wiseman when we return. Don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you simply need to catch the news at a different time, you can always subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search Farm City Newsday on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's Farm City Newsday. It's available on both Apple and Android devices. Are you looking to increase yields up to $1,200 per acre? Well, our friends over at Phycoterra have a soil microbe food that's the glue your soil needs to improve the microbial life and provide growth to your crop and return. With the application of Phycoterra to your soil, it can increase water retention, improve nut quality, and provide longer-term viability. You can stick to growing and let Phycoterra stick to your soil. Head on over to phycoterra.com/almonds to see the difference on your orchards today. That's phycoterra.com/almonds.
Wild Eye is a proud partner of growers throughout the Valley State and Nation and provides reliable, affordable, field-proven monitoring and control solutions to help you save time and money. With increasing water scarcity, ask Wild Eye's qualified staff about their simple, easy-to-install and use monitoring systems to help you keep track of your precious water resources and also be SGMA compliant. With more than 50,000 systems working daily on farms like yours, you can count on Wild Eye. Visit them today online at mywildeye.com.
BioBest Sustainable Crop Management is the leader and most reliable supplier in biological crop protection and pollination. Since 1987, their team has dedicated themselves to bringing you sustainable alternatives for pest management. Interested in hearing more? Reach their representatives at customerservice.na@biobestgroup.com. That's customerservice.na@biobestgroup.com. And a local representative will reach out to you within 24 hours. BioBest North America, defining sustainable agriculture.
Welcome back to Farm City Newsday by AgNet West. In today's national headline, sponsored by the American Farm Bureau Federation and the National Association of Farm Broadcasters. Strong commodity prices and continued government assistance are pushing farmland values up by 14% in the central Midwest and 10% in the central plains. An Illinois farm banker surveyed by the Chicago Fed says, quote, government payments have given a boost to the ag sector, unquote. In its quarterly ag newsletter, the Chicago Fed says farmland values in the 7th District climbed 14% on a year-over-year basis in the second quarter of 2021, their biggest gain in 8 years. Values are expected to climb even higher during the third quarter of the year because 7 of every 10 bankers are forecasting higher district farmland values during the July through September period this year, while 30% forecast stable values. The values for quote good unquote agricultural land moved 3% higher in the second quarter, according to a survey of 152 bankers in the district. All 5 district states in the Chicago survey showed double-digit year-over-year gains in their agricultural land values, even though too few Michigan bankers responded to the survey to report a numerical change in farmland value. These headlines are brought to you by NAFB and sponsored by the American Farm Bureau Federation. Now back to the show.
You've been listening to Farm City Newsday by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. I'm tossing it right on over to Randall Wiseman with today's livestock report.
Well, in today's livestock news, bipartisan legislation was introduced in the U.S. Senate last week to improve livestock disaster assistance. The Hagstrom Report says the bill is designed to accomplish several things. That includes aligning coverage between the Livestock Forage Program, otherwise known as LFP, and Emergency Livestock Assistance Program, or ELAP. It will also increase producer assistance under LFP to compensate them more accurately for feed costs, specified transportation costs for feed and water as covered losses under ELAP, and make those program improvements permanent. Senators John Hoeven from North Dakota and John Tester from Montana introduced the bill. Hoeven is the ranking member on the Senate Ag Appropriations Subcommittee. Tester serves on the Appropriations Subcommittee. They both said ranchers are really up against it and are doing all they can to help them through this severe weather. Hoeven said our livestock producers are facing real challenges during this drought. Our bipartisan legislation makes common sense improvements to the Livestock Forage and Emergency Livestock Assistance Program to better meet the needs of those with boots on the ground. Well, during last week's Cattle Industry Convention in Nashville, Tennessee, the National Cattlemen's Beef Association solidified U.S. cattle ranchers' commitment to environmental, economic, and social sustainability with the release of the U.S. Cattle Industry Sustainability Goals. The goals call for demonstrating climate neutrality of U.S. cattle production by the year 2040. NCBA past president Marty Smith said by setting goals, we're publicly committing to continuous improvement and setting targets that allow us to measure and document those efforts. Now, the goals also seek to create and enhance opportunities that result in a quantifiable increase in producer profitability and economic sustainability by the year 2025. It also enhances trust in cattle producers as responsible stewards of their animals and resources by expanding educational opportunities in animal care and handling programs to further improve animal well-being. And after shipping delays, new equipment was expected at the Texas A&M AgriLife Bill Sims Wool and Mohair Research Laboratory. The new capacities and expansion work continues as the lab receives new, high-capacity commercial testing equipment. According to the American Sheep Industry Association, the newly expanded laboratory will utilize state-of-the-art machinery and technology that was obtained through a cooperative agreement with ASI Sheep Venture Company. It'll also continue to provide innovative research and testing services for cashmere and alpaca fibers. And while the lab is in full swing with renovations as new high-capacity commercial testing equipment arrives, individual fleece testing services continue to be offered to growers. Now, the lab addresses the needs of national and wool mohair research programs. Scientists at the wool lab conduct high-priority research projects for sheep and goat raisers throughout the country. Research on objective measures of fiber, for example, has been critical in developing improved flocks of fine wool-producing sheep. I'm Randall Wiseman for AgNet West.
Thanks, Randall. And in my next report, FSA programs offer assistance to drought-impacted producers. A suite of programs and resources are available to farmers and ranchers affected by drought conditions. That's through the USDA's Farm Service Agency. USDA's Rod Bain has comments from FSA Administrator Zach Duchenow in this report.
Drought-plagued farmers and ranchers have a myriad of traditional and drought-specific USDA Farm Service Agency programs available to assist in mitigating impacts on crops and livestock. FSA Administrator Zach Duchenow says one example is
livestock forage protection. That program can cover up to 60% of the cost of grazing livestock for up to 5 months. Now, there is a $125,000 per person and legal entity payment limitation for LFP, and grazing losses have to be due to a qualifying drought condition.
Qualifying producers can also utilize offerings such as the Livestock Indemnity Program and areas within the Emergency Assistance for Livestock, Honeybees, and Farm-Raised Fish Program. More information about USDA Drought or Natural Disaster Assistance Programs is available through local USDA service centers or online at www.farmers.gov. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
It's that time where we head out for a short break. We'll be right back with more of the day's agriculture news and farm features right here on AgNet West Farm City News Day. Are you looking to increase yields up to $1,200 per acre? Well, our friends over at Phycoterra have a soil microbe food that's the glue your soil needs to improve the microbial life and provide growth to your crop and return. With the application of Phycoterra to your soil, it can increase water retention, improve nut quality, and provide longer-term viability. You can stick to growing and let Phycoterra stick to your soil. Head on over to phycoterra.com/almonds to see the difference on your orchards today. That's phycoterra.com/almonds.
Wild Eye is a proud partner of growers throughout the Valley State and Nation and provides reliable, affordable, field-proven monitoring and control solutions to help you save time and money. With increasing water scarcity, ask Wild Eye's qualified staff about their simple, easy-to-install and use monitoring systems to help you keep track of your precious water resources and also be Sigma compliant. With more than 50,000 systems working daily on farms like yours, you can count on Wild Eye. Visit them today online at mywildeye.com.
BioBest Sustainable Crop Management is the leader and most reliable supplier in biological crop protection and pollination. Since 1987, their team has dedicated themselves to bringing you sustainable alternatives for pest management. Interested in hearing more? Reach their representatives at customerservice.na@biobestgroup.com. That's customerservice.na@biobestgroup.com. And a local representative will reach out to you within 24 hours. BioBest North America, defining sustainable agriculture. Welcome back to Farm City News Day by Agnet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Around the state, 2020 crop and livestock reports are starting to be released. In my report today, Tulare County Agricultural Commissioner Tom Tucker says interagency and multi-sector collaboration go into creating these reports. Tucker explains the collaboration is needed to cover all areas of data, including pricing, production, and acreage of each commodity. Let's take a listen to part one of my interview with Tucker. All right, Tom. So as I briefly mentioned before we started recording, every year I like to do this and I chat with the agricultural commissioners about their crop and livestock report, and it gives them a chance to highlight some of the wonderful things that are going on in the county as far as the commodities go.
Yeah, I, like any commissioner, are happy to talk about our crop report and what our growers have done and the value of their efforts. It means a lot to all the people of our county.
You guys have yet to release your crop and livestock report, and I'm wanting to gather more information on how this report is compiled together. So first up, you guys are in the process of still collecting the data and putting everything together, correct?
Yeah, we are. We've received the bulk of the numbers and the data that we need. Of course, we've been taking pictures and photographs throughout the season as well, but it's quite a process to put all that together in just the right format and have a nice report that we can publish.
Now, when do you guys typically put yours out? Is it in the fall, winter? How does that work?
Well, we start collecting as soon as information is available from the 20 crop year in this case that we're talking about. So as far as the 2020 crop report goes, we've received the bulk of the data that goes into it, which are the numbers, the planted acreages, the values of those individual crops. That starts off early, as soon as the growers, in many cases, finish up their crop years, and we send out a request paper, usually a hard copy request or an email request, and they send us back the information about what every individual grower has raised, whether it be animals or crops specifically, the amounts and the values for this particular year. We take that information, of course, save it appropriately. We also take information from packing facilities, which the majority of our fruit and commodities are packed and mm-hmm. processed in some cases. And that information comes directly from them. And we're able to get more and more information from different sources. Later in the season, later in the year, we actually get information from NAS, the National Statistical Statistics Service. And that's, of course, a USDA function, but we also have, you know, the state-specific individuals that help us and send us information. And that, too, it goes into the process because we receive information that sometimes from a pricing standpoint, we can see what's happened throughout the state, whether our county specifically might have received a little bit more value, you know, prices for their commodities, our growers did, versus some in other parts of the state. So with all of that information together, you know, we follow some guidelines that are given us by the Crop Report manual that is published by NASS. And that way, everybody in the state, all of the ag commissioners in the state, are following the same basic guidelines. Then we look at that was our pricing and our volume of what the commodities were produced, but we have to have acreages to go by or counts of what animals were raised. Well, we get that information too from all the sources I talked to you about. We also have our pesticide permitting database, which tells us exactly what growers have taken out a permit to spray during that past season. So they under their name, they tell us they've got 100 acres of a certain type of citrus, or maybe that they're different commodities. So we've got all the information we need to publish a well-rounded report that has all the information that we know is in it.
I've spoken with NASS before about different, whether it's the census or other sort of data collecting opportunities, surveys, and sometimes producers are hesitant to participate. Do you find that there's hesitancy when producers or for producers to contribute their data, or is this something that is, you know, required as a producer here or across the state in their counties?
Well, we do find a little hesitancy at times. You know, I'm sure there's some that just don't want to deal with, you know, paperwork.
Sure.
And or anything that goes along with that. But every once in a while, you'll find a few that view that information as their own, and they don't want it publicized, fearing that somebody might have ill intentions for it, mm-hmm. or whatever that might be. We assure them as much as we're able to that the Food and Ag Code specifically lays out privacy laws regarding crop and livestock report information. You know, we can receive that information, and even though we're a government agency subject to public information requests, that specific information as far as the grower and who they are and all of that, that is held private. That way nobody can identify any specific grower with any of the information that's given to us either by them or by NASS for that matter.
Again, this was just part one of our conversation. Stay tuned throughout the week as I will continue to air the remainder. But for now, it is time for us to head out for a short break. We'll be right back with more of the day's national headlines and local reports when we return. Remember, you can always catch a recap of this interview or any of the reports mentioned in our show today just by heading on over to our website, www.agnetwest.com, for more information. Are you looking to increase yields up to $1,200 per acre? Well, our friends over at Phycoterra have a soil microbe food that's the glue your soil needs to improve the microbial life and provide growth to your crop and return. With the application of Phycoterra to your soil, it can increase water retention, improve nut quality, and provide longer-term viability. You can stick to growing and let Phycoterra stick to your soil. Head on over to phycoterra.com/almonds to see the difference on your orchards today. That's phycoterra.com/almonds.
Wild Eye is a proud partner of growers throughout the Valley State and Nation and provides reliable, affordable, field-proven monitoring and control solutions to help you save time and money. With increasing water scarcity, ask Wild Eye's qualified staff about their simple, easy-to-install and use monitoring systems to help you keep track of your precious water resources and also be Sigma compliant. With more than 50,000 systems working daily on farms like yours, you can count on Wild Eye. Visit them today online at mywildeye.com.
BioBest Sustainable Crop Management is the leader and most reliable supplier in biological crop protection and pollination. Since 1987, their team has dedicated themselves to bringing you sustainable alternatives for pest management. Interested in hearing more? Reach their representatives at customerservice.na@biobestgroup.com. That's customerservice.na@biobestgroup.com. And a local representative will reach out to you within 24 hours. BioBest North America, defining sustainable agriculture.
Welcome back to Farm City Newsday by Agnet West. In today's national headline, sponsored by the American Farm Bureau Federation and the National Association of Farm Broadcasters. Growth Energy, the world's biggest ethanol trade association, announced that CHS is its newest producer plant member. The addition brings Growth Energy's membership to a total of 91 producer plant members and 8.8 billion gallons represented out of the total U.S. annual ethanol production. CHS has been a premier ethanol marketer, trader, and producer of renewable fuels for more than 40 years. They produce 260 million gallons of fuel-grade ethanol and market 1 billion gallons of ethanol every year, making CHS one of the nation's largest suppliers of ethanol-enhanced gasoline and the largest U.S. retailer of E85 ethanol. Growth Energy CEO Emily Score says they're thrilled to welcome CHS to their growing powerhouse list of Growth Energy producer plants. Score says, quote, "As a whole, CHS has already contributed so much to our industry as an associate member of Growth Energy, having just announced the sale of E15 at 19 more Midwest terminals through its refining business," unquote. A release from CHS says, quote, "We value working together for shared success, and we look forward to active participation in Growth Energy and its efforts to advance pro-biofuels policies and expand consumer access to higher ethanol blends," unquote. These headlines are brought to you by NAFB and sponsored by the American Farm Bureau Federation. Now back to the show.
You're listening to Farm City Newsday by Agnet West. I'm your host, Danielle Lee. I'll toss it right on over to Agnet West's Brian German with more local news.
A free webinar covering irrigation and nutrient management is coming up next week. The Irrigation and Nutrient Managing Meeting for Berry and Vegetable Crops is scheduled for Wednesday, August 25th. Simultaneous Spanish translation will be available for the webinar, which is set to begin at 8 a.m. UC Cooperative Extension Vegetable Crops and Weed Science Advisor Richard Smith will begin the morning with a presentation on organic soil fertility for vegetables. That will be followed up with discussions on the role of soil moisture in development and management of Macrophenia charcoal rot on strawberries, an overview of biostimulants, and an update on crop manage, irrigation, and nutrient management decision support tool. After the break, the rest of the presentations will go over the impact of biostimulants on strawberry yield and nitrogen uptake, strategies for minimizing pesticides, nutrients, and sediments in surface water, along with an overview of groundwater basin conditions. Water Program Director for Ventura County Farm Bureau, Jody Switzer, will close the webinar with a presentation on conditional ag waiver updates. Information on how to register for the meeting is available at the Topics and Subtopics blog from UCANR. I'm Brian German for Agnet West Radio Network.
Thanks, Brian. And we've recently talked about REAP-funded projects, but what might be some examples? Well, Rural Business and Cooperative Service Administrator Karam Anil provides examples of energy-saving and efficiency projects supported through loans and grants of the Rural Energy for America program.
For example, in 2021, Minim River Lodge in Oregon, they're using a $16,000 grant to purchase and install solar panels to expand its solar energy system. So these additional solar panels will produce 13,693 kilowatt hours of renewable electricity and save the lodge more than $16,000 in energy costs per year. So, you know, this is an example of a business that is able to improve its own bottom line and also help support combating climate change through the use of these solar panels. In Iowa, Textile Brewery LLC is using a $20,000 grant to purchase and install a 38 kilowatt solar array in their facilities. There are other examples as well. We see people using our guaranteed loan program. Sometimes folks use that guaranteed loan to do anaerobic digesters for their businesses. Just a variety of those kinds of things are available.
For more information on the program, visit rd.usda.gov. You've been listening to Farm City News Day by Agnet West, providing you statewide agriculture news daily. Now let's take a listen to today's featured segments.
Back in the day, there were only a couple types of milk, regular and skim. These days, milk is made from practically anything. Hi, I'm Rachel Eslick with your Agnet West Health Bite, and today we'll be breaking down the differences between cow's milk and a few milk alternatives. Although I'm a first-generation Portuguese-American with family roots in the dairy industry, I'm also a nutrition nerd who enjoys many different kinds of non-dairy milk. For the sake of brevity, let's take a look at a few of the popular alternatives, soy, almond, and oat milk, as well as regular milk and skim milk. Before we compare what's on the nutrition label, let's also address why someone would choose a milk alternative. If someone doesn't tolerate lactose, a sugar compound found in dairy, that would be a strong reason. Beyond that, if someone is vegan and doesn't eat any animal products, or if they're trying to watch their calories and macronutrient intake. Other than that, some of us simply like to experiment with different foods and find our taste preferences. If keeping calories low or high is the primary goal, the lightest option is almond milk at just 30 calories per cup. Whole milk is the heaviest option at about 140 calories per cup. Skim, soy, and oat milk are between 80 and 130 calories per cup. For those trying to bump up their protein, skim and whole milk are the winners. Each have about 9 grams. Soy has a respectable 7 per cup, while almond and oat milk only have a couple grams of protein. If carbohydrates are important to you, unsweetened almond and soy milk only have a couple grams of carbs. Meanwhile, oat milk has about 15 grams, which makes sense since it's made from oatmeal, a whole grain. Skim and whole milk have 12 and 13 grams of carbohydrates, respectively. And the third and final macronutrient we'll look at is fat. Not surprisingly, whole milk has the most with about 9 grams per cup. Skim has almost none. Almond, soy, and oat milk fall in the middle with between 3 and 7 grams per cup, respectively. One of milk's most redeeming qualities is calcium, which makes our bones stronger, right? So how do the milk alternatives stack up against regular dairy milk? Well, it's a mixed bag. Almond milk actually has more, at least on the label I used for our purposes today. Almond milk has 30% of the daily value compared to about 25% in skim and whole milk. Oat milk has about 20% of the daily value, and soy has the least at 15%. Over the years, I've heard almonds and therefore almond products like milk demonized because the crop requires a lot of water. Then again, cows have been thrown under the bus for their contribution to climate change. But we'll leave the milk sustainability comparisons for another day. For Agnet West, I'm Rachel Eslake. I can help you reach your health and fitness goals. Visit reachfit.net.
To get more information on the topics you heard today, visit Agnet West online at agnetwest.com. Get even more connected by following us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter by searching at Agnet West and our team of Brian German at Brian German Agnet West and Danielle Leo with at D Leo Agnet West. This has been Farm City News Day by Agnet West.